This is On Second Thought. I'm Celeste Headlee. 55 years ago, the University of Georgia accepted its first African-American students. That was a step that Bill Shipp had demonstrated for years earlier. Shipp was a young student editor for the campus newspaper, and he went on to cover some of the biggest stories of the civil rights era, from the integration of Ole Miss to the Ku Klux Klan's murder of a Georgia Army reservist days after the passage of the Civil Rights Act. Bill Shipp was inducted into the Georgia Writers Hall of Fame this month, and he joins me from his home in Acworth. Hi, Bill.
Hi there. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks so much for joining us.
Good. Thank you.
Can we start with the meaning of having your name added to the Hall of Fame? What does that mean for you?
Well, it is a tremendous honor that I'm being a journalist. I am hardly part of the literati of Georgia, but I was greatly gratified and humbled by the honor.
Well, let's go back to 1953. I mentioned that you were an editor for the campus newspaper, but you and a group of editors actually resigned from the Red and Black because they wouldn't allow an African-American student into the law school. That student was Horace T. Ward. He eventually became a federal judge. And he spoke, although he's passed now, he spoke about the whole incident during a panel in 2013. And he says he didn't think he was expecting a lot of trouble when he applied there.
I was operating under some serious miscalculations. So that was my miscalculation. The state officials and the university officials were operating under a serious miscalculation. They did not think I was a serious student. They thought that I was, or they advocated, or pronounced that I was a foot soldier to break down segregation.
What were those discussions like with you and your fellow journalists on the campus newspaper? And were you afraid that your resignation would end up hurting your career?
No, that didn't cross my mind. I'd already served an internship at the Atlanta Constitution, and that had turned out very well the year before all this hubbub. So I wasn't worried about my career. But I did decide I would show the faculty at the University of Georgia and the students how I felt, so I enlisted in the Army.
That'll show them.
That'll show them, right.
How long did you end up staying in the Army?
I stayed in the Army a little over 2 years.
So let's fast forward the timeline about 10 years or so when President Johnson signed the Civil Rights Act. And let's take a listen here to the president speaking to the nation about that law.
We believe that all men are entitled to the blessings of liberty, yet millions are being deprived of those blessings, not because of their own failures, but because of the color of their skin.
How did your reporting on the Civil Rights Act and then some of the violence that came afterwards sound? And what I mean by that is, how did you know what story to cover?
Well, you had to use your news intuition to see what stories to cover, and you had to find out which personnel from both the right and the left were included in the incident you anticipated. Like, say, a fire burning, cross burning by the Ku Klux Klan, or a march by the Student Nonviolent Committee. You needed to know who was going to be there and what form it would take. And that was fairly easily defined.
Well, just days after the passage of that law, an Army reservist in Georgia, I mentioned this before, named Lemuel Penn, was murdered by members of the KKK. He was stationed at Fort Benning. He was going home to D.C., but he was killed just outside Athens. Here is then-Georgia Governor Carl Sanders condemning that attack.
This unfortunate, nonsensical occurrence today represents the inflammatory reaction of a person with a demented mind. I have commanded the Georgia Bureau of Investigation by executive order to go in immediately and assist fully in the investigation.
If you were going to point to one story that you felt was really kind of the peak of your reporting, what would it be?
Oh, it would probably be the Lemuel Penn murder leading up to the murder trial.
What made that story challenging for you?
Because that was symbolic of all the stories that were going on across the South, not only in Georgia, but in Mississippi, Alabama, Florida, South Carolina, and so forth. Church burnings and people shot and murdered. But the difference in the Lemuel Penn thing is that Lemuel Penn was trying to mind his own business. In fact, he had even called his wife and said he wasn't going to get off the post because he didn't want to get involved in any kind of problems. And he was killed for no other reason, as testimony showed, than he happened to be one of so-called Johnson's boys driving a car that had a D.C. license on it.
What is a reporter's responsibility at times like this, where there is incidents of violence and possibilities of further violence? What is a reporter's responsibility? Is it part of your responsibility to keep tempers calm? Are you just there to report the facts?
Well, I think at that time, your responsibility, of course, the Lemuel Penn murder was a big, big story. But it was at that time, the story told itself. And so a good reporter would only remain objective and report day by day what occurred. What occurred at the end of the trial of the accused murderers was an outrage. Despite eyewitnesses and at least one Klansman turning state's witness, they were acquitted of the murder charge.
There has been a lot of discussion, especially recently, about a reporter's responsibility, the journalist's duty to the public, and how far that duty goes. Do you fact-check your sources? Do you call things out? Is it a journalist's responsibility to say, to label something as racist, for example? And I'm so interested to hear from you, who actually covered some of the most blatantly racist and violent attacks, how you think maybe the journalist's job has changed or not changed over the ensuing 50 years?
Well, I think it's changed to some extent. Opinion, when I reported for the Constitution and other people, opinion was clearly labeled as opinion, and news was clearly labeled as news. We seem to be, with social media and other things, we're losing that objective kind of separation of powers in the press. And usually and very often, particularly in the social media, things are labeled as racist or non-racist or white supremacist or not white supremacist. And I think there's some danger in that we kind of cloud our vision as to what we're really looking at.
Do you think the news media has been responsible for some of that change, or that has been outside forces and social media?
Well, I think social media has forced it, and it's forced the mainstream media to change what it does and the way it does things now. And that has come about in order for the mainstream, so-called mainstream media, to survive.
Let's listen actually to a portion of a campaign ad that Jimmy Carter used during his very first presidential run for the 1976 race.
Hi, Governor Carter from Georgia.
Sure.
Running for president. I want to ask you to help me next year.
In the beginning, Jimmy Carter's campaign was a lonely one. But through the months, more and more people recognized him as a new leader, a man who will change the way this country is run, a competent man who can make our government open and efficient.
Sometimes you had to fight for stories. I understand that you actually had to fight to break the news that Jimmy Carter was running for president, right?
Well, that was a civil war, yeah. There was some debate in the Constitution newsroom as to whether Jimmy Carter's decision to run for president was worthy of page one. Since I had the story, I thought it was indeed worthy of page one.
And did you win that battle?
Yes, I won that battle. I lost several others, but I won that one.
What is a reporter's responsibility when it comes to candidates? And I obviously this has come up quite a bit in the recent campaign, but having covered so many political races, what is your responsibility in terms of presenting the candidate with all their truths and untruths as well? Is that a reporter's job?
That is a reporter's job. It's to present what a candidate says and present it in context. For instance, in that ad you had about Carter, you had to present Carter in the context of what he had done in the Georgia legislature and in his first run for governor. And you get a little bit different picture of Carter when you do that.
What different picture do you think you get? I mean, as opposed to what the normal picture of him was. Was there a stereotype of him as a sort of rural Southern boy?
Yeah, there was a stereotype of him as a Southern good old boy. And he augmented that and played on it, in my judgment, in order to get elected. He said that he would invite George Wallace, the racist governor of Alabama, to Georgia to speak, and sent out other signals that he was really just a good old boy, and that was not what he was at all. He did not run that kind of campaign for governor, however.
My guest is journalist Bill Shipp, recently inducted to the Georgia Writers Hall of Fame. So I want to play you another comment, and this is from Terry Hazelwood, who was an editor for the newspaper at the University of Georgia. In 1961, this is when he made this comment, and he said that responding to fights over integration and responding to them with violence was not the way forward.
We are trying to do everything we can to get everybody to accept the situation. We don't like it, but if they will just accept it without violence and can behave themselves and act like ladies and gentlemen in this situation, that is the only good that can come from it. There's nothing good that can come from throwing rocks and bricks and hurting people.
So that's a story that was being reported 55 years ago, and here we are in a situation where public schools, at least, are more segregated than they were even at many times during Jim Crow. How far have we come, or did you expect us to still be fighting these same battles in 2016?
No, and I don't think we've come very far at all. We've almost traveled into a circle with the harsh feelings on both sides of the racial line, and the election of Obama as president kind of demonstrated how far apart we are and how far we have to go. And that was further underlined by the election of Donald Trump as president.
Since you mentioned Trump, I wanted to test out your journalistic ethics on one more issue, because he criticized the media quite a bit. He claimed before he won the electoral vote that the media was rigging the election. Here's his comment from Pennsylvania last month.
We are in a rigged system, and a big part of the rigging are these dishonest people in the media. Big part of it. Isn't it amazing how, you know, they don't even want to look at you, folks. I think they consider you, like Hillary, they consider you deplorable and irredeemable also.
What did the media get wrong or get right during this election? To what extent do you hold media coverage of Trump responsible for his success?
Well, the media made Donald Trump. By every time Trump would utter anything, they'd call him or get him on TV, and he was happy to oblige. He must have gotten several billion dollars worth of TV free by just riding whatever the news people called him. It's not unusual to have a demagogue attack the press as one of their main villains. Jimmy Carter did that. He singled out the Reg Murphy, who was then editor of the Constitution. He attacked him almost daily in his run for governor. Senator Herman Talmadge did likewise in his race for governor and senator. So you can just go on and name demagogues one after the other who thought that the media was an easy attack, and they used it.
So what advice can you give? And I say that knowing that at this point our industry of the media and journalism is in sort of a precarious state, in that people are trying to rethink their strategies over the past 2 years, wonder to what extent they served the American public and wondering to what extent they did not serve the nation at large. So what advice would you give to journalists about how to move forward?
Learn to write and practice writing all you can, because while the demand for people to be in print or people to be on the air or even in the social media goes on and changes day by day, the desire and the ability to have good writers will go on, and good writers are rare to come by.
That is Bill Shipp. He was a longtime reporter and editor with the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. He was inducted into the Georgia Writers Hall of Fame earlier this month. Bill, thank you so much, and congratulations.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I enjoyed it.